The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Do you want to get away? Leave the cold weather behind and relax in the Caribbean? Start your new year by relaxing on the beach instead of getting back to the grind. There's an amazing getaway at an even more amazing price, the Pineapple Beach Club in Antigua. Right now, for just $149 per person per night, plus a $250 resort credit, you can enjoy an adults-only, all-inclusive getaway on a white sandy beach. Let me tell you a little more about the resort and the island. This is an all-inclusive. Meals, snacks, beverages, water sports, daily entertainment. Just 30 minutes from the airport in the capital city, St. John's. This offer expires soon. Go to pineapplebeachclub.com or 800-772-8711 to book your all-inclusive stay. For $149 per night per person, ages 16 and up, you can enjoy everything I just mentioned and more. And you will get a $250 resort credit. That's pineapplebeachclub.com. See website for complete details.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, the wide world of President Trump.
Now is the dawn of a new era.
His first week in the White House, a breathless one.
It is time that the American people had a president fighting as hard for its citizens as other countries do for theirs.
Democrats respond to Mr. Trump's voter fraud claims.
I felt sorry for him. I even prayed for him.
And protesting abortions.
March for Life 2017.
A message for Washington.
Thousands are gathering here on the National Mall ahead of President Trump's announcement of a Supreme Court nominee.
But first, let's dive into British Prime Minister Theresa May's visit to the U.S. She spoke Thursday to Republicans in Congress on a GOP retreat in Philadelphia.
We pick up that mantle of leadership once more to renew our special relationship and to recommit ourselves to the responsibility of leadership in the modern world.
She then visited the White House Friday, meeting with President Trump.
I look forward to continuing to work with you as we deliver on the promises of freedom and prosperity for all the people of our respective countries.
Prime Minister May, speaking alongside President Trump to reporters in the East Room of the White House, she even had an invitation from the Queen for President Trump to visit the UK later this year. Let's chat now with CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy, also at the White House. Stephen, what were your impressions?
Well, it was an opportunity for President Trump to face the press for the first time in the East Room of the White House, standing alongside Prime Minister Theresa May, representing the strongest ally of the United States. In some respects, they seem to have a nice rapport. But at the same time, what we saw was President Trump bristling at some reporters' questions, particularly the British reporters, who are infamous for their, let me put it this way, their blunt style of asking questions. And Mr. Trump didn't seem to care for that.
It's clear May wants a trade deal with the U.S.
I'm convinced that a trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. is in the national interest of both countries and will cement the crucial relationship that exists between us, particularly as the U.K. leaves the European Union and reaches out to the world.
Stephen, how open do you think Trump will be to this?
Well, we know he's open to it. It's one of the reasons why the White House was looking forward to this discussion. You heard Theresa May in that soundbite mention the fact that the U.K. is pulling out of the EU. That's the Brexit. And so now, in order for the United States to maintain a functioning trade relationship with the United Kingdom, a new bilateral relationship has to be negotiated. The United States has about $100 billion in annual total trade with the UK. It is one of the countries with which we have a trade deficit. That is, we buy more from them than we sell to them. That said, I expect that because of the nature of the special relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. and the fact that the U.K. is number 7 on the list of trading partners that the U.S. has, that this deal will not be all that difficult for President Trump to negotiate.
May's promised Parliament she'd stand up to President Trump on areas where they disagree, and torture may be one of those, despite saying he'd reinstate waterboarding. Mr. Trump's now deferring to his new Secretary of Defense, James Mattis.
He has stated publicly that he does not necessarily believe in torture or waterboarding, or however you want to define it. Enhanced interrogation, I guess, would be a word that a lot of people would like to use. I don't necessarily agree, but I would tell you that he will override because I'm giving him that power.
Stephen, what do you make of that? Is that a way out of a campaign promise from Mr. Trump?
It is an affirmation of the fact that President Trump is deferring to his top generals, as he keeps saying, the Defense Secretary James Mattis, who says that the United States does not torture. But it also comes several days after repeatedly we've heard from top Republicans in Congress that they believe that torture is against the law and should remain against the law. President Trump is saying he personally disagrees, that he believes that torture works, in fact, that there ought to be an eye for an eye. But the leaders in the Congress and at the Pentagon say it will not work for them, that they don't believe it works. And so Mr. Trump says he will defer to the Pentagon on this.
This has been a wild week at the White House. Stephen, do you think the pace will keep up?
Well, I don't know about Mr. Trump's pace. I don't know about my pace or my colleagues here at the White House. This has been an intense deluge of news in this first week. And, you know, what's interesting is the extent to which the president himself has sought to make news.
Thank you for your hard work at the White House. CBS's Stephen Portnoy there, keeping watch on the world. Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
The White House is planning action on investigating what President Trump believes was widespread voter fraud in the election. Mr. Trump told congressional leaders Monday 3 to 5 million immigrants in the U.S. voted illegally. House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi.
I frankly feel very sad about the president making this claim. I felt sorry for him. I even prayed for him. But then I prayed for the United States of America.
CBS News senior legal analyst Andrew Cohen on what Republicans in Congress may do.
The Republican lawmakers who control both houses of Congress largely share the president's view that voter fraud and not voter suppression is the problem in our elections. So I would not be shocked if some House or Senate committee picks up the gauntlet here and undertakes an investigation. The question, of course, is how objective that investigation would be, and would the Fed still endorse it if it reveals, as it surely will, that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
Reports Russian authorities have arrested one of their own in connection with the U.S. intelligence investigation into the Kremlin's election cyber attacks. CBS News reporter Alec Loon has more from Moscow.
A high-ranking cybersecurity official in Moscow has been arrested on suspicion of passing information about Russian hacking, according to the respected independent newspaper Novaya Gazeta. The official is thought to have given the United States information about cyber attacks on electoral systems in Arizona and Illinois. Russia has denied it interfered in the U.S. election.
Those sanctions President Obama slapped on Russia for the cyber attacks may be in jeopardy. Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Republican John McCain, is calling on President Trump not to lift sanctions on Russia. McCain even threatened to work to codify the sanctions against Russia into law. The U.S. has also sanctioned Russia for invading eastern Ukraine and annexing Crimea.
I'd like to welcome you all to Washington, D.C. for the 44th annual March for Life.
Vice President Pence joined thousands protesting abortions just blocks from the White House with a message from the Trump administration.
We'll work with the Congress to end taxpayer funding of abortion and abortion providers. And we will devote those resources to health care services for women across America.
Correspondent Cammie McCormick was there.
Their sweatshirts read, "Defund Planned Parenthood," and their signs, "I Stand for Life." Some are wearing hats with one word, Trump. They've marched every year since Roe versus Wade, but bigger numbers are expected this year, ahead of President Trump's announcement of a Supreme Court nominee.
Cammie McCormick reporting from the National Mall. Coming up, despite a call with President Trump Friday morning, Mexico's president isn't showing any new signs of agreeing to pay for Mr. Trump's border wall.
No pagará ningún.
That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. U.S. relations with Mexico have soured. President Enrique Peña Nieto calling off a planned meeting with President Trump after he again insisted some way, somehow, Mexico would pay for his proposed border wall. Then this Thursday.
Well, we're working on a tax reform bill that will reduce our trade deficits, increase American exports, and will generate revenue from Mexico that will pay for the wall if we decide to go that route.
More from White House correspondent Margaret Brennan on how exactly the Trump administration may propose to pay for that wall.
Aboard Air Force One, White House spokesman Sean Spicer said a 20% tax on imports would generate enough money.
But by doing it that way, we can do $10 billion a year and easily pay for the wall just through that mechanism alone.
That's really going to provide the funding.
But back at the White House, Chief of Staff Reince Priebus told reporters the 20% tax was just, quote, one of a buffet of options. And aides said the tax could range from 5 to 20%. Mexico is America's third largest trading partner, with more than $500 billion in goods traded annually, helping to support 1.1 million American jobs. A tax on imports is designed to encourage American manufacturing and production, but could also lead to higher prices on imported goods for consumers.
Mexico no pagará ningún muro.
Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto canceled a planned trip to Washington to meet with President Trump. Peña Nieto has repeatedly stated that Mexico will not pay for a border wall.
La decisión de Estados Unidos.
I reject the decision of the United States, he said, that far from uniting us, divides us. Mr. Trump did not back down.
Unless Mexico is going to treat the United States fairly, with respect, such a meeting would be fruitless.
Despite Mr. Trump's campaign rhetoric about Mexico paying for that wall, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the president never said the Mexican government would write a check to pay for it.
Margaret Brennan, reporting from the White House, also concerns that 20% tariff could spark a trade war. Economists worry countries subjected to it could do the same in retaliation. That big wall, no small feat. Correspondent Manuel Bajorquez has reaction from the Rio Grande.
President Trump points to breaches at the border, like this hole along a stretch near El Paso, as reasons the nation must build a border wall.
A lack of security poses a substantial threat to the sovereignty and safety of the United States of America and its citizens.
But along the border in Laredo, Texas, Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar calls the proposed wall impractical.
You tell me how you're going to do this on a natural barrier like the Rio Grande.
Nearly 700 miles of the 2,000-mile-long border with Mexico already have some type of fencing at a cost of more than $2 billion. President Trump put the cost of the entire concrete wall at $8 to $12 billion, though analysts say it could hit $40 billion. There are some practical challenges, like building on private lands, over remote mountains, and on national parks. Dennis Nixon was one of the Trump campaign's top fundraisers in Texas, yet he opposes the wall.
You know, bad decisions are made when you don't have enough information to make a good decision.
Manuel Bajorquez, reporting from the Rio Grande. The White House also planning on curbing the number of refugees entering from predominantly Muslim countries. Correspondent Jim Axelrod visits one Vermont community now home to some refugees.
In Rutland, Vermont, the Khatib family is getting settled. They are Syrian refugees from a village near Aleppo who arrived just last week.
We couldn't bear the gunshots and the bombing. It started to happen day and night, and my daughter was like running, trying to hide in the house, and she calls my name all the time.
The Khatibs are one of two families who are among the first of 110 refugees set to be relocated to Rutland. But it's a process now in jeopardy by the president's promise, which would halt the rest of the families from arriving.
I'm disheartened, but not defeated.
Marcia Cassell is with Rutland Welcomes, a group organized to get the refugees settled in, providing them with clothing and furniture.
These are not the people that you need to fear.
But Don Chiaffi, a retired teacher, applauds the president's promise to halt the refugee program temporarily and provide more time to vet everyone coming here.
It only takes one with a vest on to blow up some of my friends. I mean, it only takes one.
But the Khatibs were already vetted for 2 years while living in Turkey and waiting to come.
It's just lack of knowledge.
Rutland businessman Mike Khalil, a U.S. citizen who emigrated from Syria as Mohammed Khalil 35 years ago, is asking the people of Rutland for one thing.
If they give them a chance, the same chance that I got, they will see that these folks would be working hard.
Jim Axelrod reporting. Foreign correspondent Charlie Daggett filed this report embedded with Iraqi forces pushing farther into ISIS-held pockets of Mosul as news spreads there of President Trump's planned changes to the U.S. refugee program.
America's war against ISIS came to a dead stop on the banks of the Tigris River that slices Mosul in half. ISIS holds the high ground on the western side of the river, firing a constant barrage of mortars towards Iraqi troops on the other. Major Arkan Hashim.
Where are the mortars coming in from?
From Al-Busir. There's some school there.
Soldiers showed us a house that ISIS fighters recently fled. In one of the bedrooms, forbidden toys that ISIS militants had confiscated. With Iraqis and American soldiers fighting a common enemy, one resident told us he couldn't understand why President Trump might tighten restrictions on Iraqis traveling to the U.S. Why would you ban us? We are the victims. In fact, American ISIS fighters have come here. Troops showed us an SUV that militants had stripped, ready to be turned into a car bomb, the most feared weapon in the ISIS arsenal. You see huge craters like this in areas that saw some of the worst of the fighting. U.S. and coalition airstrikes specifically targeted big intersections in order to disrupt the path of suicide car bombs. General Ali Al-Lami said he lost many men, and he's disappointed that Trump might make it near impossible for his soldiers to start a new life in the U.S. If America bans Muslims, it's not the right thing to do, he told us. America is a multi-ethnic and religious nation, a country of freedom. The general told us the next and final phase against ISIS in western Mosul may be the toughest. It's the old part of the city. The streets are too narrow for some military vehicles, and there's still 750,000 civilians trapped there.
Charlie Daggett reporting from Mosul, Iraq. Up next, protesters go to new heights to get the attention of the White House.
These actions are taken not solely to resist environmental policies, but social policies across the board.
And why moving day for one U.S. embassy could trigger violence.
We don't need World War III.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Do you want to get away, leave the cold weather behind, and relax in the Caribbean? Start your new year by relaxing on the beach instead of getting back to the grind. There's an amazing getaway at an even more amazing price, the Pineapple Beach Club in Antigua. Right now, for just $149 per person per night, plus a $250 resort credit, you can enjoy an adults-only, all-inclusive getaway on a white sandy beach. Let me tell you a little more about the resort and the island. This is an all-inclusive. Meals, snacks, beverages, water sports, daily entertainment. Just 30 minutes from the airport in the capital city, St. John's. This offer expires soon. Go to pineapplebeachclub.com or 800-772-8711 to book your all-inclusive stay. For $149 per night per person, ages 16 and up, you can enjoy everything I just mentioned and more. And you will get a $250 resort credit. That's pineapplebeachclub.com. See website for complete details.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. On Tuesday, President Trump took executive action to try and move forward the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines. CBS News correspondent Barry Peterson has more from near Cannonball, North Dakota.
Supporters consider this a victory in their years-long effort to build these two pipelines. Energy stocks jumped as the price of crude rose. As for opponents, they see this as a setback, but not a surprise. Pipeline protesters gathered across the country Tuesday night, chanting their criticism of the president, hours after he put his support for the pipelines in writing. Trump had different messages for the two pipeline companies, but the bottom line was the same. Get them built.
And if it's a no, we'll give them a quick no. And if it's a yes, it's like, let's start building.
He asked TransCanada to resubmit its application for Keystone. The company quickly agreed. For the Dakota pipeline, Trump ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to review and approve in an expedited manner. The Dakota Access Pipeline is vehemently and sometimes violently opposed by the Standing Rock Sioux tribe members.
The whole world's watching you.
And tens of thousands of their supporters from around the U.S. Protesters argue it disturbs sacred tribal land and say a potential leak where the pipeline crosses under the Missouri River could be catastrophic. In a statement, Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Chairman Dave Archambault II said, "The existing pipeline route risks infringing on our treaty rights, contaminating our water, and the water of 17 million Americans downstream." Kelsey Warren is the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, the company backing the pipeline. Warren foreshadowed the decision in a CBS interview shortly after Trump was elected.
Every investor believes that the moment there's a change of administration, this easement gets granted, the pipeline gets built, and the crude starts flowing.
Trump's 2016 financial disclosure shows the president owned up to $50,000 worth of the company stock. According to a Trump spokesman, he sold his shares last June. The president says this move will create thousands of jobs, but the Dakota Pipeline is almost done, and those construction workers will soon be out of work. Left behind will be only 50 permanent jobs monitoring the pipeline across four states.
Barry Peterson reporting Tuesday from a frigid North Dakota. Environmental protesters also took their message directly to Washington. Greenpeace unfurled a banner from atop the arm of a 270-foot-tall crane over a downtown construction site with the word "resist" splashed across it, visible from the north lawn of the White House. Greenpeace spokesman Jason Schwartz.
These actions are taken not solely to resist environmental policies, but social policies across the board.
The protesters came down and were arrested on a number of charges. President Trump promising to push back against rising gun violence, especially in Chicago.
What's going on in Chicago? I said the other day, what the hell is going on?
Mr. Trump's pledge to send in the feds if Chicago doesn't get its homicide rate down. Mayor Rahm Emanuel responded. Here's WBBM reporter Craig Delamore.
Mayor Emanuel seems unfazed by the president's tweet about sending in the feds to deal with Chicago's gun violence. He says the city already works with federal agencies, including the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
I would welcome, I always have, welcome federal participation in working with local law enforcement to dealing with guns and gangs. A lot of the guns you know come to Chicago come outstate.
And he wants more of them traced, but the mayor says he doesn't want to see the National Guard here.
We're going through a process of reinvigorating community policing, building trust between relationships and law, in the community and law enforcement.
WBBM's Craig Delamore reporting from Chicago. Congress gets back to work Monday. The Senate confirmed CIA Director Mike Pompeo and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, but many more nominees for the Trump administration are still awaiting a vote. And the White House says we should expect early in the week one more nominee heading to the Senate for the Supreme Court. It comes nearly a year after Justice Antonin Scalia died.
President Trump is said to be mulling over three men who sit on federal appeals courts to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court.
We'll pick a truly great Supreme Court justice.
Senate Republicans blocked President Obama from filling the seat with highly regarded appeals court judge Merrick Garland. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Democrats would not play tit for tat. However, he warned President Trump that they will fight any nominee who is outside of the mainstream. Pam Coulter, CBS News, Washington.
The White House also dropping hints President Trump may soon move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. CBS News foreign correspondent Seth Doan has this report from the Holy Land.
While there is no policy shift yet, Israelis we've spoken with are eager to take advantage of President Donald Trump's pro-Israel statements.
This is the right thing to do. This is the moral thing to do.
Moral?
Yeah, of course.
Why is this a moral issue?
Because, you know, that the Jewish people, okay, has a very long connection with the city of Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, home to some of the holiest sites for Jews, Muslims, and Christians, is also claimed by Palestinians as their capital. And they say shifting the U.S. embassy here would show the U.S. siding with Israel. It sparks disagreement even at the same coffee table.
It's a bad idea to move the embassy to Jerusalem.
A bad idea?
A bad idea, yes.
Why?
Because we don't need the World War III.
On a windy rooftop in Ramallah, we met senior Palestinian advisor Hussam Zumlut. He worried the move could cripple the peace process and give extremists a reason for violence.
It further complicates our lives, and it starts with President Trump on the very wrong foot. We wanted to start on the right foot.
No countries locate their embassies in Jerusalem, as the status of the city has been a main point of disagreement in stalled peace talks.
Better late than ever, recognize Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish people, like America does in any other country it works with.
Okay, we're now
in
the center Jerusalem's mayor, Nir Barkat, told us they stand ready to help the U.S. with any move.
You have been in contact with the Trump administration. Is President Donald Trump a game changer here from your perspective in Israel?
I think President Trump has the right vision, aligning interest with Israel.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has met with Jordan's King Abdullah. The two have agreed that if an embassy move were to take place, they'd take countermeasures, but underline they hope it won't get that far.
Seth Doan reporting. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup.
Mr. Grant, what'd you think of the show?
Didn't stink.
Goodbye to a television trailblazer and Dow 20,000. Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. TV trailblazer Mary Tyler Moore died Wednesday. She was 80. From L.A., Ben Tracy reports.
Her name was a bit longer than most, but in the 1970s, she only needed a one-word introduction.
Mary.
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 Mary Tyler Moore could be sweet.
All right.
But she also had something else up her sleeve.
You got spunk.
Well, yes.
I hate spunk.
She was born in Brooklyn in 1936 and began her career in the 1950s in live commercials as Happy Hot Point.
I'm Happy Hot Point.
Her big break came from Carl Reiner, who remembered the actress as the girl with three names and cast her as Laura Petrie on The Dick Van Dyke Show.
Well, it was like being in college for comedy.
You know what he looked like?
No, I don't want to know.
No. It's been one of the great joys of my life to watch the career of MTM.
The Dick Van Dyke Show made Mary Tyler Moore an award-winning superstar. And in 1970, it was her name on the screen. As Mary Richard, she played a single career-driven woman who juggled friends at work and at home.
It showed people that a family is not just blood members, not just relatives, that they are the extended people within the family with whom you work, the people who take you on as a kind of responsibility.
Mark Williams is interviewing me today at lunch.
Well, why you, Mary?
Because I work in a newsroom and because I'm a woman who's dressed like a man. Snake!
Besides being funny, it was also a boost for feminism. It was one of the first shows where the lead female was succeeding in a male-dominated business. The Mary Tyler Moore Show won a Peabody, and its finale in 1977 was one of the most watched of all time.
I think we all need some Kleenex.
There's some on Mary's desk.
Yet Moore's life had its share of pain. She fought diabetes and struggled with alcoholism. Her only son, Richie, accidentally shot himself and died when he was 24. Shortly thereafter, Mary Tyler Moore was nominated for an Academy Award for her performance as the grieving mother in 1980's Ordinary People.
Poor Beth. She has no idea what her son is up to. He lies and she believes every word of it.
She later found success on Broadway and in 2013 reunited with some of her Mary Tyler Moore Show castmates on the cable show Hot in Cleveland.
Hello, Globs. Looks like she made it after all.
For her, it was all about making us smile.
There is nothing so rewarding as laughter. when you've been responsible for it. I want the audience to be able to say, I like that lady, and she represents me, or she represents a friend of mine.
And so to the girl with three names, it's hats off for a life well lived.
You're gonna make it after all.
Ben Tracy, CBS News, Los Angeles.
It was a sad day for NASA Friday, marking the 50th anniversary of America's first space disaster, a launch pad fire that killed the first Apollo crew.
I'm Peter King. Had the Apollo 1 fire not happened on the ground, it might have happened in space. NASA would have only been able to guess what happened. Instead, Apollo 11 astronaut Michael Collins says they found answers and fixed what was wrong.
Yes, Apollo 1 did cause three deaths, but I believe it saved more than three later.
Collins remembered astronauts Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee as hardworking and passionate.
Thank you for your sacrifices. The Apollo crew was magnificent.
Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
A milestone for the Dow Wednesday. CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks.
The Dow Jones crossed 20,000 for the first time. Financial stocks are leading the broader market, something they've done all along during the post-election rally, in which financial stocks have risen over 16%, getting help from rising interest rates and the promises of tax cuts and deregulation. Goldman Sachs has done a lot of the heavy lifting for the Dow Jones, with its shares soaring nearly 30% higher since the election and making up about 20% of the Dow's rally since the election.
And tax filing season got underway Monday, and you've got more time this year to pay your taxes until April 18th, three extra days. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson talked with the CBS This Morning team.
The big question everybody wants to know is, how do I get money back, or how do I not have to pay? So what will the changes go? What will these changes mean?
Well, I can't tell you how not to pay, but in terms of how to get money back, one of the things that the IRS has on their brain is fraud, and they want to diminish fraud. So they're trying to do that with additional verifications. So for some people, their return could be slowed down if you claim the earned income tax credit or the additional child tax credit. The IRS is saying they're going to do some additional verifications, which means they won't mail out those returns till after February 15th. Now, for most people, 9 out of 10 people, they're saying you're going to get your return in 21 days. And you can actually log on to the IRS website, irs.gov, and track your refund with a tool that they have called Where's My Refund?
Mm-hmm. What's the free file program?
Free file. If you make under $64,000 a year, you have an opportunity to get free tax software to be able to file online for free. This is software that is a joint venture with the IRS and a number of commercial tax providers. Think everyone from H&R Block to TaxSlayer. This is software that normally costs you anywhere from $20 to $50. You're now going to be able to do this for free. And those providers also say, in addition, some of them, in addition to filing your federal returns for free, they'll file your state returns as well. The IRS says 100 million people will qualify for their free file program.
Is tax return fraud on the decline?
Yes, down 50% in the last couple of years. That's a big deal. They're also trying to make sure it continues to diminish with something that they're doing new this year, which is their version of two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
What do I mean by that? Before, to prove that you were yourself, you gave your Social Security number. Now they're going to ask some individuals to also provide their adjusted gross income figure from their last return. Just another way of verifying and proving that you're you.
Melody, in terms of the people that you know in the financial community and investment community, do they believe there's going to be a Trump premium on the market?
This is much in debate right now. We had such a huge bump. It was called the Trump bump following the election. The market, you know, rose very, very swiftly. We've seen the market kind of hover here. And I think there's a lot of wait and see right now, this sense that it moved very, very fast. And people are now saying, you know, let's see what you actually get done.
Up next, best buds for working moms on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS Radio News Podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand. or hear original audio programming like our Weekend Review show, The Weekend Roundup. You can also hear the story behind the story on Reporter's Notebook or What's Hot on Tech Talk with Larry Magid. Get these podcasts and more from iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A powerful new U.S. satellite has begun initial operations, and it could save lives. Correspondent Jen Crawford reports from outside NOAA headquarters in Suitland, Maryland.
This new satellite, the GOES-16 is what they call it, it sits 22,000 miles above the Earth, and it sends its data here to satellite dishes. And meteorologists say that is going to help them better predict where and when bad weather will hit.
Yeah, I think that's a tornado.
This week saw deadly tornadoes, violent waves, and torrential rain. You can't prevent bad weather, but meteorologists will soon have a new tool to better predict it using a satellite called GOES-16.
GOES is better, faster, higher resolution, more information, and new information that we haven't had before.
And liftoff.
Launched 2 months ago, it unveiled its first images on Monday. Fires burning in Mexico, clouds over Florida and the Northeast. When it becomes fully operational by November, GOES-16 will provide images at 4 times the resolution of current satellites. It will also be able to take pictures of an individual storm every 30 seconds. Currently, radar systems can only scan a storm every 5 to 6 minutes.
This greater resolution with a higher speed will allow us to actually see in real time storms and events as they're occurring.
It can help measure storm intensity by tracking lightning strikes. The experts say GOES-16 would have been a great help in a deadly weather week like this one.
Jan Crawford on the new satellite watching the world right now. Some best buds for working moms. Here's correspondent Chip Reed.
PTSD, depression, insomnia, eczema. Is there anything that marijuana does not help with?
I don't know yet.
Shonda Macias calls herself a pharmacist, but the medical marijuana she is licensed to distribute, while legal in D.C., is illegal under federal law.
When you see our patients come in every day and they say that I can have a quality of life, to me, that's my purpose.
The former cell biologist has a Ph.D. and an MBA, but first and foremost, she's a mother to 4 children.
So your 7-year-old MJ, has he ever seen this room?
Oh, no, he hasn't seen this room.
Her youngest is just 7, and she's trained him in the art of answering tough questions.
What does mommy do for a living?
She's a pharmacist.
A pharmacist?
Mm-hmm.
What does she give people?
Medicine.
Medicine. And what does that medicine do?
It helps them feel better.
Those answers work for now, but Macias knows that as MJ gets older, his questions will become more pointed.
It's okay for people to judge me based upon what I've chosen to do, but it's very hurtful for them to judge my son, where he's innocent in this.
That's why she needs help.
What do you call this group, by the way? Do you just say the group?
Support group.
All of these buds participate in this budding industry, and all of them are moms.
I didn't have any problem with the sex talk, and I think it was because I had a book to go with.
The inside jokes these mothers tell here deal with the stigma surrounding their jobs.
I don't want my kids to have their friends' parents say, oh, you're not allowed to go to their house.
When I first decided to come into the industry, I had a lot of concerns because I was a licensed attorney, so I had to decide, and I chose that I was going to go outside the box and I was going to risk my license to do this.
Only Macias actually dispenses the drug. The others are involved in other aspects of the industry. Leah Heiss is an attorney and president of a company that recently earned a license to dispense medical marijuana in Maryland.
Some of the biggest anxieties that we all share, regardless of whether we touch the plant or not, is this concept that our businesses are at risk. Mm-hmm. So our incomes are at risk, and that is an issue that comes up with my kids a lot.
Shantae Hopkins-Green guides medical marijuana patients through the regulatory red tape, and she has a 10-year-old.
For me, the challenge is just there. Every time I answer a question, it leads to more questions with my son. But I have that relationship with him where I will answer it. I try to answer it in an age-appropriate way, but he can ask me anything, and he does.
Jennifer Culpepper is a mom of two. Her company does brand strategy and graphic design for the marijuana industry.
I do feel like I have a timeline because my 9-year-old is one more year in elementary school, and I think that she cannot enter middle school without having this conversation.
So as moms, are you all a little nervous about going this public with what you do?
No.
No, you're not. All of you with young children are going to let your children watch this story on TV.
I might screen it first.
There are now 8 of these medical marijuana cultivation centers right here in Washington, D.C., and they're popping up all across the nation as more and more states legalize marijuana for medical purposes and, in some states, for recreational use.
Chip Reed reporting there. Cookie dough for the masses. Here's correspondent Tony DeCopo.
In this gleaming kitchen, Kristen Tomlin makes chocolate chip cookies the old-fashioned way.
Fold everything in and make sure that all of the ingredients got incorporated, even at the very bottom of the mixer.
Except for the part where you put them in the oven.
Cheers.
Cheers.
To cookie dough.
To cookie dough.
It's really good.
This little girl with an easy-bake oven is now the founder of Dough, a specialty shop devoted to the glories of raw, edible cookie dough.
Why do you think cookie dough deserves a shop of its own?
Because it is a lot of people's obsession, and it's been a secret obsession for a long time.
Ben and Jerry's helped bring cookie dough into the mainstream back in 1984. But Tomlin got the idea after she and some friends bought a tub of cookie dough meant for baking.
We were sitting in the car passing this tub of cookie dough around, and I said, why is this not a thing where you can go into a shop and buy cookie dough, not feel bad about having to sneak it and sit in the car and eat it?
The truth is, licking the spoon can be risky. Both raw egg and flour can harbor bacteria. But Tomlin says her dough is completely safe. She uses a pasteurized egg product, and the flour is heat treated.
The only risk is that you'll become addicted to it.
Julia Kramer is a senior editor at Bon Appetit magazine who has tracked cookie dough's journey from mom's mixing bowl to mainstream retail.
There is no one who would say, I don't like cookie dough.
To Kramer, the rise of specialty sweet shops from cupcakes to pies is just history repeating itself.
In the beginning, everything was a specialty shop. Like, if you made pickles, you only made pickles. And if you were the bagel guy, you only made bagels. And so, in a way, specialty shops are sort of a return to the old way of doing things.
I'm obsessed with cookie dough, so I was like, I have to go.
But Tomlin isn't that specialized. Some of her cookies are fully baked.
Wait, but aren't you cannibalizing one customer base in order to feed the other?
No, I think I'm liberating them to, like, really indulge and eat cookie dough however they want to.
Tony DeCopo with a sweet way to end this week's show. We appreciate your listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind, you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup's produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.